Case for argument is Thomas versus UBS. Mr. Sloan.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Jevin Sloan, and I represent the plaintiffs, the appellants, in this case. We're here this morning seeking reversal of the District Court's memorandum opinion and order dismissing all of the plaintiffs' claims on the pleadings. These claims that the plaintiffs brought on behalf of themselves and a class of similarly situated individuals were in connection with accounts that they held with the defendant UBS in Switzerland. We've alleged that the plaintiffs and all these individuals paid penalties and interest to the IRS as a result of these accounts not being disclosed. And we have also alleged that the reason the plaintiffs did not report or disclose these accounts was because UBS failed to fulfill certain duties that it owed to the plaintiffs regarding these reporting requirements and also committed fraud in that regard.
So what exactly do you think UBS should have done very specifically?
Yes, Your Honor. UBS should have done exactly what it said it would do in the QI agreement.
That's not the answer. So there are two things. They could have given these people's names to the IRS. Are you also saying they could have withheld income from the accounts?
Yes, and if you look at...
And they don't just withhold. You know, when you withhold, you don't just sort of keep it and spend it. You send it to the IRS.
Correct. There were two choices UBS had, and UBS has admitted this. If you look at paragraph 69B of our complaint, where we quote the deferred prosecution agreement, UBS admitted that the way the QI agreement was set up, they had two choices. Well, actually, they had two options that were the choice of the clients. One option was, as you said, Your Honor, to request that the client give them permission to disclose the accounts, which would result in disclosure by UBS, the QI. The other option was to request that the client grant them the authority to divest the account of assets that would trigger UBS's reporting obligation, but wouldn't remove the client's reporting obligation. So in that,
now, is it your opinion that foreign source income for U.S. taxpayers does not generate an obligation to pay tax?
Your Honor, I don't have an opinion on that. That the allegation is
no. I'm asking you. This is a legal question. Do you think that people have no obligation to pay income tax on foreign source income?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that question.
You don't?
No. I don't.
I'm shocked. Do you know that the United States has a huge network of double taxation treaties with other countries because, in fact, there is an obligation to pay income tax on foreign source income?
Well, Your Honor, I'm just not familiar with the term foreign source income. But I do understand that the plaintiffs had to pay taxes on the interest and the dividends that they received in these UBS accounts. I do understand that. And the plaintiffs now understand that.
Wait a second. Well, I must have known that. But they all signed in, on their income tax return. They did not check the box which says, do you have a foreign account?
Nowhere is that alleged in the complaint,
Your Honor.
Oh, come
on.
Your Honor, that is what UBS...
They didn't check it on their in their income tax returns. They didn't check it.
Well,
if they checked it, how would they have gotten the penalty? The penalty is because they concealed the fact that they had these foreign accounts.
Your Honor, there's an inference there that's just not supported by the
allegations. What do you think the penalty was for?
The penalty was for non-disclosure. But respectfully, Your Honor, that can happen.
Well, that means not checking the box on the income tax return.
That's not necessarily so. There's lots of ways that couldn't have been disclosed. Let's say there was no Schedule B at all attached.
I don't buy any of this. This is nonsense.
Well, Your Honor, this is like
a criminal suing his parents and saying, you didn't bring me up right, right? So these people, they violate the law by not acknowledging that they have a foreign account. And then they say, oh, UBS, they should have prevented me from violating the law by reporting this income directly to the IRS. Of course, they still have been penalized probably for not signing the form. or they should have forced me to sign the form or told me to sign the form.
But, Your Honor, that's not what we're saying at all. That's what the district court said. That's what UBS is saying. But everything, the characterization, that characterization relies on so many adverse inferences and so many assumptions that just aren't supported by the facts.
There are legal doctrines that underlie this that the facts really can't change, like the obligation to tell the truth to the IRS about your income.
Yes, and those legal obligations are vis-a-vis the plaintiffs and the IRS. And whether the plaintiffs had a defense against the IRS for not disclosing these arguments.
And I see absolutely no duty on the part of UBS to save the plaintiffs from themselves. I mean, what an amazing thought that, you know, if I decide not to tell the IRS about income that I receive on bank accounts, that somehow I can blame my bank for it.
But Your Honor's question presupposes a decision on the part of the plaintiffs. I think what cannot be lost is the fact that if you look at the allegations regarding each of these plaintiffs, there was not a tax avoidance motive for any of these accounts.
But here's what I don't get your position, but you can't even establish, there was no agreement between your clients and, this QI agreement was just between the IRS and UBS. There, you don't have any documents that show that there was what USB's duty was with respect to this reporting. There's no evidence that there was a fiduciary duty for them to become tax advisors to your client. I just don't get it. I don't get how you get the obligation to that UBS had some kind of duty to do anything.
To explain the answer to the duty question is really it's a two-part answer. And I think the district court erred in answering both questions. First is, what's the source of the duty? And second, why does that duty extend to the plaintiffs? The source of that duty is the QI agreement.
But no, the plaintiffs are not parties to the QI agreement. And you haven't even told us what's in UBS's client agreements with these people.
Well, respectfully,
the direct contract.
With respect to the contract between UBS and the plaintiffs?
And your clients, yeah.
But for the purpose,
if it's a banking agreement, there's no fiduciary relationship.
But the fiduciary duty and the negligence duty aren't based on the client agreement. They are based on undertakings that UBS tied itself to
and
under the QI agreement.
What possible authority do you have for the idea that if UBS promises the IRS to come clean, that somehow that redounds to the benefit of your clients and allows them to lie about whether they have foreign bank accounts?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, there's nothing to support the inference that they lied. Nothing whatsoever.
Except the fact, as Judge Posner has pointed out a couple of times, that they paid very significant fines, which you do emphasize in the complaint.
Yes, but they paid those fines. The standard for
when they came clean under the amnesty program that the IRS established, they got the benefit of not being criminally prosecuted. And they got the detriment of paying up the taxes, interest, penalties that they owed. And that was that.
Yes, and the reasons for their settlement, UBS can explore that in discovery. You cannot infer that by settling, they have admitted.
What do you mean by settling?
By settling with the IRS, Your Honor, through
the
voluntary.
They paid the full penalty, the full 20%.
They paid
it. That is settlement.
Because, as Your Honor noted, it took criminal the specter of criminal prosecution was hanging over all of this. The same day the IRS announced.
Well, that makes it worse, of course, for you.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think anybody wants to voluntarily subject themselves to criminal prosecution, whether they think they're guilty or not. Whether they the reason
well,
that they
either criminal or they just committed a civil violation for which they paid the entire penalty. They didn't settle for less than the 20%. They paid the entire penalty, and you think that people who I don't know on what basis they can shift the responsibility. Oh, let me ask you a different question. What is the income of these people?
The
three plaintiffs.
The named plaintiffs.
I don't have the exact numbers, but I'll tell you, as we've alleged, when Mr. Thomas opened up his account, he was working in Israel and had made in that particular year more money than he'd ever made. These are not, he's not a wealthy individual. I believe it was somewhere in the neighborhood of, and this is not in record, but I believe it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $200,000. Because he was in Israel and needed access to his money, he thought UBS is a safe, secure bank. He paid.
What does he do?
He's a consultant of some sorts. I don't know exactly what his job is.
And the other two, what are they?
Ms. Guetta is, at this point, I believe, an 80-year-old widow. Her husband opened up the account.
So does she have a high income?
No, sir. She does not. In fact, in most of these cases, because the penalty was on the highest aggregate balance.
How do people who don't have high incomes get involved with foreign banks?
Well, Your Honor, as explained in the complaint, Mr. Thomas got involved with the foreign bank because he worked in Israel and needed a safe, secure place to put his money. Mr. Patel was working in Italy.
Well, if you're an American working in Israel, why are you going to Switzerland with your money? I don't get that.
That's a question they can explore in discovery. The reason we've stated in the allegation that must be accepted as true is it was because he needed access to his money, and it was for non-tax evasion reasons. Mr. Patel was working in Italy, and for various reasons that we've explained in the complaint, he could not deposit his money as U.S. funds in Italy, so he did it in Switzerland. Ms. Guetta's late husband, he opened up a Swiss account due to religious persecution in Egypt. At the time they were, and his concerns were realized when they were completely divested of all their assets in Egypt. When they fled, they had the equivalent of one American dollar in the Swiss account. These were non-tax reasons. These, as much as UBS would like to paint them out this way, these are not tax cheats.
It doesn't make any difference if they don't tell the IRS that they have a foreign. You're not arguing that they didn't know that UBS was a Swiss bank. And that's all that it takes. They know UBS is a Swiss bank, and they don't disclose this income. That's why they had to pay the penalties. The IRS doesn't just exact penalties from people who haven't done anything wrong.
That's correct. May I answer Your Honor's question?
Sure.
That's correct. That explains why they had to pay the penalties. What we are here talking about today is, but why didn't they disclose? And to get to the duty question, if I could, I think if you look at...
Did UBS tell them you don't have to pay tax on the income in your UBS account?
We have not alleged that they affirmatively told them that, no. Mm-hmm. What we have alleged is...
They told them that. They could make an argument, you know, we didn't know better. We're not sophisticated. They told us it was tax-free. That would be a respectable argument, but the notion that somehow a bank has an affirmative duty to remind people that income is taxable, that's kind of breathtaking, right? I mean, that...
Your Honor, you don't have to make a holding that broad. What we are saying here is because of the QI obligation, and there were two obligations.
But you also argue the QI agreement is void and unenforceable, don't you? Claim three?
We argue that as an alternative... The customer agreements are void and unenforceable under an alternative unjust enrichment theory. But for purposes of our negligence claim, we allege that there was a duty. And there's two duties.
A duty to do what exactly? A duty to remind them they have to report or what?
Your Honor, there's a requesting obligation. There is a reporting obligation. That's the only thing that UBS and the district court focused on, and that is to report certain things to the IRS.
What's the requesting obligation?
Requesting obligation is, as UBS has admitted to in 69B, UBS had to request certain information from the clients. And if you look at the purpose of the QI agreement, the whole reason for that request was the IRS wanted disclosure to happen in one of two ways. Either UBS disclosed it as the QI, or through these disclosures that are these requests that UBS made to the clients then disclose it.
But I don't understand how, just because UBS didn't do that, that muzzled the clients from honestly telling the IRS what their income was. The IRS lost out on a second source of information, but it's not like somebody was told, you must remain mute. It's crazy.
May I answer that question, Your Honor? I see that I'm virtually
out
of time.
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry, did you say?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Again, that question presupposes that just because you have an account in Switzerland, the idea of the issue of tax disclosure automatically comes in your head, and you think about it, you consider it, and you make a decision to not declare it. There is nothing in the record to support that these plaintiffs, who had no tax avoidance motives in setting up these accounts, would have even thought about that. And that is why the IRS set up the QI agreement as it did, which was either...
No, that's just to catch more people. Look, what I don't... I don't see is that how would they be better off if UBS had told the Internal Revenue Service these people are making money, you know, in our bank account? They'd still get their penalty because they lied on their income tax form.
Oh, Your Honor, they wouldn't have. If UBS would have fulfilled its duty at the outset to do one of the things it was required to do, then the plaintiffs would have been on notice of the reporting obligation, and they have said the reason they didn't report it.
The income tax return is clear. If you have a foreign bank account, you check a box. If you don't, so these people were not going to check the box, and that meant that if the UBS reported to the IRS, that would just the IRS would. Go to these people and say, "Look, you lied on your account. You tried to conceal the existence of your foreign bank account," and they'd be punished for that, right?
No, Your Honor, they wouldn't, because
of course they would be. If you lie on your income tax return, you get punished.
Yes, Your Honor, but they wouldn't. But we've alleged
yes,
they could find
yes,
they would have lied because they knew they had a foreign bank account. And they didn't check the form.
Your Honor, our argument is that that requires a number of inferences and assumptions that are not supported by the allegations of the complaint. That
You're telling me they did sign the forms?
I'm not. No, I'm telling you they did not.
You admitted they didn't sign the forms. That's an admission.
Your Honor, we've admitted they didn't disclose the accounts, but that can happen a number of ways. What we have alleged is they didn't even know about the disclosure requirement. That's
but
the allegation.
But it's in their income tax return.
People are supposed to know the law.
You
can't say, you know, I never looked at my Form 1040 and therefore I didn't file one. I mean, there's a minimal amount of diligence that people are responsible for. You're mad because UBS didn't save them from themselves.
You say on page 24 of your brief, it's certainly plausible that appellant's reliance on UBS was reasonable or justifiable, including each appellant's failure to check the box on line 7A. You're admitting in your brief they didn't check the box. They knew they had foreign bank accounts. This line 7A is perfectly clear, and they didn't check it. And yet you admit UBS didn't tell them you don't have to check that box.
Or as we say in our brief.
Thank you. Your time's expired. So, but I'll give you more time later.
Thank you.
Questions?
Good morning, and may it please the court. I think I will be brief. I want to remind all of us that we are here on a complaint that the district court gave.
Oh, can I ask you? I meant to ask your opponent, but he can respond also. Was there any consideration of certification?
We
have opinions which say you're supposed to certify or not certify class action before you go to the merits.
Yeah. We filed two motions at the outset. One was to strike the class allegations, which we have authority for in this circuit, and also the motion to dismiss. Judge Dara took off calendar as premature the class motion and ruled on the motion to dismiss.
But you know, that's so against your interest. People have this knee-jerk reaction about class actions. But at this point, you have a judgment that runs only to these three plaintiffs. Every other person in this situation is unaffected by this decision.
Well,
they all would have been bound by res judicata if you had had a class.
I understand that. From our perspective, we have been fighting these cases in several different jurisdictions. There are therefore effectively opt-outs from what would be a class. I don't think we'll ever get to the class for reasons that are probably apparent from the briefing. But we have cases in various places, none of which have been successful, I will note, but there are motions to dismiss pending.
But the number of cases might have been lower had you allowed the class to go forward, because people do have to take the trouble to opt out. That's a step. Not everybody does.
I understand Your Honor's point, and I accept that.
Was this something that Judge Darrow did on his own, or was this something you requested or acquiesced to, not dealing with the class motion?
We affirmatively moved to strike the class allegations,
right,
and he took it off calendar. There was no
discussion between you and Judge Darrow when he took it off the calendar.
Yeah, there was nothing at all. It was all in writing, and we didn't have a dialogue with the other side about stipulating to a class or whatever. This path seemed the quickest way to dismissal of this case. I fully accept that if we had stipulated to a class and then got a good result on this appeal, that it would be more effective, but we're taking it one step at a time, I guess is all I can say.
How many people are there in the class? Do you know?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. It might be a better question for the plaintiffs. I do think, if we were to get to the class issue, we have rather strong arguments. This is a fraud case. You have allegations of what different UBS representatives said to different plaintiffs. We have miscellaneous states' laws that would be applicable. We have a lot of reasons.
So what if in your account form, though, you represented to people, and bearing in mind that the Internal Revenue Code is a nightmare full of loopholes and strange rules where sometimes people do pay taxes on income, sometimes they don't, and your form said, here's the answer to your problems, just invest your money with UBS and keep it all offshore, and you will be in a sheltered income environment. You won't have to pay anything. And these people were gullible, and they believed that that was true, even though perhaps had they gone to a good accountant, they might have been set straight. Surely that's something that would state a claim.
Well, I'm not sure I would. First of all, there's no allegation of the facts that you just described. But if there were, would it be plausible that somebody would complete their Form 1040? There's a question that says, do you have an interest in or signature authority over any foreign bank account or other financial account? And based on assurances from UBS that this was not taxable, would they then reasonably, plausibly interpret that advice, which, by the way, was never given, as a reason for them to say no when the answer was yes because someone had told them it was non-taxable? That's ultimately not their judgment to make. The form requires disclosure. Maybe in some cases it was taxable. Maybe in some cases it wasn't. Those who went in the voluntary disclosure program and paid penalties, I think, conceded that it was taxable. But that's not the taxability question is not put by that line. It's not their judgment to make. It's a disclosure which is required on the tax forms. And then we can talk about whether it was taxable. But I would go back. I mean,
Well, I suppose if you have signature authority, you it mightn't be your income, right?
Might not be. This is a question which they are required to answer. It doesn't answer the question ultimately of taxability because there are a lot of other things on the Form 1040 which could affect that.
Yeah. So your position is that they should have said yes, and then if they thought that there was some exception, then this form TDF-9022 or some other form would have said, although you have signature authority, it turns out you don't have to pay taxes on this money.
Correct. And I think ultimately, if there were people in that category, they may not have needed to go to the voluntary disclosure program. But those people who did, which is what defines its class, by definition, I think, had non-disclosed accounts which were taxable. If they weren't taxable, they wouldn't need to get amnesty.
So does the doctrine of cheek have anything to do here? This, you know, that applies to criminal prosecutions, of course, under the tax laws. But if these people had a genuine good faith belief, here's UBS saying, you know, yes, you're working in Israel, but just park your money in Switzerland. And I guess Mr. Patel was one who was flying over to Switzerland because it was too risky to make a phone call somehow to or from the U.S. But if they thought that this was something that kept them outside the jurisdiction of the United States, misguided though it may be, and UBS was responsible for that view, would that be something civilly actionable?
Well, I don't see how they get around the fact that they lied, and they can't make a plausible claim that somebody tricked them or misled them into lying. Now,
well, you're trying to say, though, I mean, their claim is actually that the reason they lied is because of you. You essentially told them to lie. I'm trying to cut through the clutter here. I think that's the idea, which is why we have now this civil claim against you. They've made their peace, however unhappily, with the Internal Revenue Service, but now they're saying it's actually your fault we got in this whole mess.
They're certainly saying that. I thought I heard Mr. Sloan say that they're not affirmatively alleging that we told them to lie or they told them couldn't.
I thought he said that too.
So I think the issue is whether there was some process around the QI agreement that would have somehow put them on notice that they had to be honest on their tax returns, I guess is the theory. I have a little trouble articulating it. And I just the one other point I want to make is that only.
So your point has to be that UBS may not have been a saint in any of this, but it actually was not legally responsible for what the plaintiffs did, if you want to talk about it as an intervening cause or something like
well,
that.
Well, absolutely. There's the I agree. They weren't saints in this. They entered into a deferred prosecution agreement, paid hundreds of millions of dollars in fines, and admitted to aiding and abetting those U.S. taxpayers who were avoiding their taxes.
In what? I'm sorry?
Hundreds of millions of dollars in fines in connection with the deferred prosecution agreement, and admitted aiding and abetting those U.S. taxpayers who were then caught.
But that's on the criminal side of the aisle.
So well, it's on the criminal side, and it by definition means that this class were the principals in the tax violation, which UBS, regrettably, aided and abetted. That's what's been acknowledged.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. If there are no further questions, I will submit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Kitchens. So, Mr. Sloan, your time expired, but you can have some more time if you want.
Thank you, Your Honor. Respectfully, the question is not whether the plaintiffs failed to disclose. That's not in dispute. The question is, why did they fail to disclose? We have articulated in our brief why we think it was because of UBS. I think the way to illustrate this is to set up the inherent tension between the purpose of the QI agreement that UBS bound itself to and what UBS actually did. The QI agreement...
I don't see the connection between anything they did and the decision of these plaintiffs not to pay or not to pay taxes, but simply not to check the box which asks whether you have an interest, you know, or signature authority in a foreign account. That's the
yes,
connection
Your Honor.
I don't see.
First of all, there's the allegation that they did not know about the disclosure requirement until 2009. Then there is what happened when the accounts were opened at UBS. If you look at the QI, what UBS was required to do under the QI agreement, non-disclosure was not an option. What UBS bound itself to was to either get the client's consent to disclose it or get the client's consent to make the account where it didn't have to be disclosed by UBS but still had to be disclosed by the client. The goal under either of these options was disclosure, either by UBS or the client. Non-disclosure was not an option. Then you contrast that with UBS's scheme that it's admitted to, which was to make an end around those obligations so that it didn't have to disclose and that the plaintiffs were in the dark and didn't know they had to disclose.
Well, I don't understand. How can the plaintiffs not know? That's what I don't understand. They have income. They have an income tax return. They're supposed to indicate whether they have any foreign income, and then there are forms for that. How could anything UBS do short of actually telling them you don't have to sign that box? It's not meant for people like you. Where is the room for misunderstanding? That's what I don't understand.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, there's a couple of components to that. There's the undertaking that we've alleged, which creates the duty. Then there's sort of this, I think, this causation issue. What we allege is that that was a way for us to find out. The purpose of what UBS did was for us to not to find out. What happened on the tax returns, in order to create this plausibility conclusion or this adverse inference that we knew what we were doing on our tax returns, you have to make an inference.
How can you not know that you are failing to make a truthful statement on your income tax return when you don't check that box? I don't get that.
The inference is, and the assumption.
What are you thinking?
The inference is, the assumption is they were thinking anything at all about it. There's nothing in the record to support.
What can you be thinking when you do not check the box? You have money, maybe a lot of money in a foreign bank account, or a lot for you. According to you, the fellow Thomas wasn't rich or anything like that, but so this amount of money that he had in UBS account was probably a big figure for him. It was not something he forgets about. So when he's asked whether he has an interest in a foreign account, he obviously knows that he does. So why doesn't he check the box?
The answer to that question is, this is one line on one schedule of the tax return. For UBS's argument to be accepted, you would have to infer that each of these plaintiffs read...
But if it was just an accident, didn't he tell the IRS, look, it's one form, I'm out of the country, I don't know, there's a lot of excuses. If you act in good faith, that's a defense against a penalty. But apparently, that wasn't... You say they paid their penalty because they're afraid of criminal prosecution. That suggests they didn't think they had any excuse.
Well, Your Honor, I wasn't representing that's what the plaintiffs are going to say. I was simply saying that there's lots of things that were in play on why...
I don't understand that.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, you don't understand.
This guy has $100,000. How much did Thomas have in UBS?
$100,000 to $200,000.
He's got. There's a lot, because he's a little person, according to you. He's not a big, rich guy. So he's got a substantial amount of money in a foreign bank account. He knows it. The box, it's not in fine print. You know, it's, and he doesn't check it. So what is he thinking? That's what I'm wondering. What is he thinking? Just answer that, and then we'll let you go.
Your Honor, I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know he thought about it at all. What I do know is those are questions of comparative negligence, comparative fault, things that UBS can raise through discovery and on a motion for summary judgment.
And I just have one. So bottom line is, what you want us to adopt a rule that says the plaintiff's responsibility to file accurate tax returns is outweighed by not getting notice from a bank that they needed to disclose, even when the bank didn't prepare or advise the plaintiffs on their tax returns. I mean, that's really the bottom line in terms of, if we went with you, that's the kind of holding you'd want us to.
No, not necessarily, Your Honor. The whole. May I?
Okay.
Is that a sufficient
or
answer?
Rule or fine? Yeah. Okay. That's the bottom line. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel. And next case.